How are you, Mike?
Pretty good. Had a root canal this morning, so feeling a little tired, a little sore.
That sounds horrible.
It's my least favorite place, maybe. I've always
I have
hated
never
it
had a
there.
root canal, but my impression is it's really bad.
It's actually not that bad while it's getting done. I think it gets a bad rap just because they have such good numbing techniques now. But the stuff that they have to do just makes it so you're gum in that area is pretty bruised up when they're done. So it's more the aftermath.
Yeah. I remember when I got my wisdom teeth taken out, I was just like impatient. Like I like hurt through solid food essentially, like before I should have, because I was this dumbass teenage boy. Like I was just like, no, I'm hard food. I'm tired of milkshakes or whatever. And I would just like bleed through a piece of bread or something.
I remember like getting my wisdom teeth out. I didn't eat solid food for like a week, and when I had chicken fingers for the first time, it was a very magical experience. So good.
Speaking of, probably going to McDonald's tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah, that
Are
sounds like
they?
something
Yeah,
to
I mean, I've seen some of the stuff on that. Is there money to be made on these Happy Meals? I guess is my question. I had friends not in the Pokemon community texting me like, "Hey, should I buy a Happy Meal?" And I was just like, "I don't really know. If there's a Charizard, probably, but I don't think there is. It's just
No, so I will
Pikachu
tell you,
maybe might be
and
worth
maybe
it."
we're jumping right into the Pokemon printing more stuff, prices be crazy thing, but like
Right. Yeah, I did.
I saw Russell Lepar's angry tweet today about like how these people who are just like professional hoarders are like pathetic, for lack of a better word. And then somebody was asking him like what he was referring to, and he said he was referring to something in Verbank Pokemart. And historically, I avoid Verbank Pokemart like it's the plague. But I was like, okay, well, let me go in for a second and just see if I can see what he's referring to, because a Pokemon chewing out some terrible, hoarder sounds like something I would read, I guess. And I couldn't find that thing, but in like scrolling through 20 posts, it reminded me why I should never go to Verbank Pokemart. But they were selling the packs for $6 a pack.
Wow.
Like, I have an unopened McDonald's.
And they're moving, though. This is not.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. No,
This
there
is
was
not
one guy
like.
who was like, I have 30 packs, and
Yeah.
then this comment was like, sold.
Right. Like, I've seen these eBay postings and stuff, and I just don't know. Like, is it people really want this stuff, or are people just trying to make a quick buck and they think it's worth money or something
Right.
like that?
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
I don't know. I've all this petty profit stuff really sort of frustrates me. It just like I mean, I know there's certain people out there who I think know what they're doing. Say Pendarvis or someone, like clearly not just kind of parasitic about it, but so many people, and the same thing back in the 6, 7 years ago when the hot topic was do we pack weigh or not? And it's the same thing there. People are just like, oh, money, easy money. Like, people just like they just don't, without, I don't know how to put it, but expressions like time is money and things like that, just like don't, you have to kind of live in the real world or something for those to have some sort of truth to them. And people who don't experience that sort of thing, they don't realize that, and they're just like, oh yeah, $200, let's do it. And they don't think about like making it harder for people who casually just want to buy cards, or think of the children, blah blah blah, stuff like that. It's just the mere notion just to profit some is enough motivation for certain types of people, and those certain type of people just almost always irk me.
Yeah, I mean,
Or
so when I
lack.
was looking at Verbank Pokemart, they were selling, there was a guy selling Vivid Voltage booster boxes for $200.
And
I will say though, just kind
they
of
were
on
going, I
that,
guess.
I haven't been in the Facebook groups, any Pokemon Facebook groups for years, and it's just one of the best decisions I've ever made in my entire life. And so for anyone listening, anyone considering it, I would recommend it. It'll make the game better, and it'll make your capacity to enjoy it better too. And you'll get all the drama anyways, because people will tell you about it. People will post it not on in the Facebook groups. People will put it in your group chats and stuff. So you're not missing anything. You're not gonna have a real serious FOMO experience. I get all the beef, all the drama and stuff, but I don't have to wade through just the people telling you that, wearing a mask is stupid and stuff like that. Like, mental health, just take a break, mute them, leave them.
Oh, that's, I think before, I before Pokemon, I was not a big Facebook guy. Like up until 5 years ago, I was like not on Facebook at all. And I felt like I got into Facebook because my kids got into Pokemon. And I was like, well, you got to like go to Verbank and like stuff. Cause that's where like the, you know, the information was. It was like, you subscribe to Six Prizes and you go to Facebook and you read like this Verbank thing to get like the list of like, I want a cities with blah, 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 mm-hmm. like random.
Yeah. There was just the kind of this weird transition period in the game where, and I guess that's kind of where we are now, but the exodus from the forums or something all kind of happened at once. And so kind of just out of nowhere, people stopped using like Pokegym, Hey Trainer. No one ever really used Pokebeach as far as I know. I think Pokebeach was sort of kind of the Reddit of the old online boards. It was kind of the one you went to like if you weren't competitive, and you'd kind of get more people who weren't competitive, whereas obviously Pokegym was probably the big one. But then kind of just out of nowhere one night, Jason Klosinski was like, I'm just making Facebook groups now, and that's just like, that was Hey Fonte, and then that became Verbank, and that's just kind of what the online community is now. But it's so far removed from, you know, Jason's project. I think Jason's project with it initially was to try to bring the community together, which of course a large group is supposed to do that, but I feel like, just like we're talking about now, there's very rarely good things coming out of Verbank, it seems, and it's always sort of negative things. But anyways, it's just, there's just always the bad actor, however you want to put it. It just seems hard, and it's those sorts of people that you want to weed out. Like, I think the community as a whole, for as bad as Verbank tends to seem a lot of the time, like, is good, and it's just these just crazy ridiculous people that you have to sort of learn how to avoid. And I think just limiting your social media to like people you care about, people you know, and things like that really go a long way in sort of establishing that. And, you know, I'm just all for mental clarity and trying to focus and work on ourselves a little bit more, and just don't need to be a part of an annoying Facebook group if all it does is upset you.
I feel like there was also like, there was this like moment, I don't know if it was like 2.5 years ago, when someone, I can't remember who, I apologize, was like, we should move all this stuff to Twitter. That's what like the Hearthstone people do, because it helps grow the game when the discussions happen out in public, because like people can just find it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, all of a sudden everybody kind of moved en masse to Twitter because they were like, oh, that does make sense. We should do that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I missed. I think this was probably in the year or two when I was just kind of mostly absent. So yeah, I missed if there was kind of an official like mandate to do this, or if it was just kind of like a general like esports move. But I mentioned it in the group chat, I think a long time ago, just something I was noticing, just like so much of the like Pokemon card game Twitter scene are like newer players. I would say a good percentage of the people on Pokemon card game Twitter are from kind of like 2018 or so. And I found that interesting, just in terms of like, why then? Like, why was that the big year? People all kind of seem to coalesce in a general time frame, and I don't have a good answer for that
yet. Yeah, there was a moment when somebody was like, hey guys, we have to move everything to Twitter now.
Yeah. I think it was Ray. I mean, and that kind of makes sense because you said it was like the Hearthstone thing. So I think it was Ray that posted that if we want to grow the, you know, Pokemon card game into a pseudo esports, that's kind of the next step.
Yeah, that sounds like it might be right. I remember thinking it was someone that I didn't really like know that said this, but their argument was like a good argument. I was like, okay, I'll get on this train. It's in my repertoire, every single bar is hard, spitting fire like I'm the human version of Charizard. Welcome to the Trash Lunch Podcast. It's me, Brent Halliburton, here as always with Britt Pybus and Mike Boucher. Attendance is 100%. Reviews are static. You have to leave a review if you want us to leave the review on the air. Oh, you know, one thing, I can cut this out of the pod, or I can just leave it in because I love this neglect. So we tried to have our first ever guest on the show, and I have to tell you, I felt like this is bad. This is worse news for you guys than it is for me. I felt like I got an instant news flash that we were super old, because when I told him when we were recording, he was like, oh man, I'm not available. I think they definitely think that like pods and things like this are meant to be recorded at like 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no.
Not this pod, baby.
We're adults. We record pods at a reasonable hour. We gotta go to bed.
That's funny.
I definitely got the like boomer vibe when I told him when we were recording the pod, and he was like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. Oh well. But I was also debating telling them that they have to go leave a review before they come on the pod. That way it's unbiased. But it's just straight out bribery, which seemed like it would really work.
That'd be funny. I imagine I would think Xander would be like fairly like tongue in cheek about it, and his review would just be like, I'm coming on the show. Here's 5 stars or something.
All right, guys, let's jump right in. Let's talk about postponing Pokemon for this year for a second, because obviously that's like the big breaking Pokemon news is a world is not happening.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is really too surprised. I keep seeing, not related to Pokemon, I guess there are occasionally, I guess, in line with the Verbank talk initially, occasionally just people across the country are trying to run in-person events, so that occasionally happens. But I don't think anyone was too surprised to see official play take another year off. Like, I think part of the consideration is not just that you want to keep people safe, but you just also can't risk being the brand that has the super spreader event or that risks it, like, you know, even if enough time has passed such that like most everyone should have been vaccinated or something like that, it's just still doesn't seem like it would be worth any amount of risk. Like, I don't know how people are confident in their ability to run conventions this year, but they seem to be happening either way. But yeah, it's hard. I don't know. I'll be curious to hear what you guys think about it. I have a kind of general concern. I haven't looked at the numbers just because I don't know how many people were qualified last year, like before the season ended and stuff. I would like to know kind of how many people were at 500 and kind of how many people like were on pace to, because I imagine a lot of players were, and I'm probably being a little too charitable about myself to group me in this category, but I intended to try to finish my invite in the spring. It was a couple hundred, 200 points off, I think, and maybe would have done it, but certainly players, better players than me were in a similar boat. And without like championship points being given online, I just like this kind of demographic is just out of luck. And I've just sort of been trying to brainstorm ways, you know, Pokemon can like account for that. And if they need to or something, I'm not sure where they'll end up going with it. But I think my sort of purported solution is that Worlds just has to be an open. I think it has just to be like a 3 or 4 day open, and you just give buys and day buys, round buys, you know, based on CP and some stuff like that. I feel like that is a way that guarantees it's a huge success. People, you know, it puts a lot of players in seats. It's an open, anyone can participate, and we're in such bizarre, uncharted waters that I just feel like, you know, doing something totally new doesn't seem wrong to me. Like, no one's going to complain like, oh, this isn't really the world championships anymore. It's like, well, the world has changed since then. We need new solutions. We need to do things a little bit differently. So that's sort of what I was thinking about. I guess the more important point being that if with another year of online only, we need better things than Players Cup. Like, maybe keys and stuff is what works, but we need championship points, I think, are just, there has to be an overhaul to the invite system for, I think, the 2022 Worlds to mean anything to the players who aren't qualified. Otherwise, it's just like, what's going on? It's just like a trip I'm taking in 2 years or something.
Perhaps I guess I didn't read the actual article. So I remember when they first said it, they would carry over the championship points from, you know, last season to this season. Did they say that they're not doing that this time?
No, there's nothing like that, but I'm just with that. Like, okay, so the points carry over. That doesn't matter if there aren't new ways for me to earn points.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right, and so like, what if there's just, you know, another year passes and I'm at 499 championship points or something, and just 2 whole years have gone by and there have been exactly 0 opportunities. You know, obviously, like, they're not going to do nothing, of course.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is, I'm hoping for something a little more drastic, but that's just me, I guess.
I like your idea of, like, I mean, when they do recognize that they can now pick up the tournament, like they can start doing events again. I mean, I think we've always talked about how that first regional is going to be very crowded. I mean, I like your you know, hey, like we can just do something new. Like we could have a, you know, personal in-person players cup or something, and just like they should just have an NAIC, you know, get a gigantic convention center. Like, why just start up regionals again and act like, you know, nothing happened for the last year and a half? They should do a special event. Like they
that's what I mean. Yeah. Like instead of the world championships, it could just, it's an open that is for the best player. You know, the winner is recognized as the best player in the world. And it's just the like COVID London mega battle, something like that. Like, right. And two, like you're saying about, like, I think no matter what, the whatever the first like large event back is going to be crazy and huge. And what better way than to put it in like a flagship event or something like that? Like, not just like, it's not just that, like, the Hartford Regionals was really, really big this year or something. It was like, no, this event in London that's been planned for years that only hasn't happened yet because of a global pandemic. Like, it's going to be the biggest event. We've got the 25th anniversary sort of on the horizon as well. Obviously, that will kind of be expired by 2022, but still just kind of like a big welcome back to the game or something, I think.
Like they could just do a big event. And what's interesting is you probably don't have to book a gigantic convention center years in advance, like historically you've had for Worlds, because I assume everyone's canceled every event basically forever right now.
Yeah, especially at these really big ones, like the one, like you book a small town venue or whatever, no big deal. But yeah, the huge legit ones that Worlds would be occupying, like, yeah, surely there's no events planned for these sorts of places.
I mean, I know when people were talking about whether or not Worlds was going to happen this year, one of the things people were saying was the Excel Center has been turned into a vaccination site through like October or something. So, you know, it's hard to imagine they were going to do Worlds because it's a vaccination site.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I assume you guys don't have any strong opinions, but I know the last time we talked about events getting postponed and this time too, immediately there were a bunch of posts to the Pokey Parent Facebook group where people were like, did my kid just age up another year? Like, blah, 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 blah. I mean,
right.
Hey, I recognize it's all super bad for me.
Yeah, I think that's something too that I think maybe can get accounted for somehow in the kind of idea I'm trying to propose. I'm not sure what it would be because I, you know, on one hand, I don't know if you want them against the Masters right away, but on the other, like, would it be fair to give these aged up players like buys and then just keep them in the senior division, like something like that? Would that be fair, unfair, or not? And it's hard to say. I really wonder kind of this, what the states of either the junior and the senior division will look like just in terms of like competency, because I imagine the players, the younger children who are competing in online, they're not going to lose their chops, their fundamentals, or what have you. But I would think if like a vast majority of players, of these younger players, just don't play for a year or two, like how would they be able to compete at Worlds, say? Like, it seems different to me. And obviously not that many younger divisions are few and far between, or younger kids are in the online events.
A whole generation of children who never played supporters on the first turn.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I'll take you a step further. My guess is that there are plenty of new masters that have started playing during the past year, like through the online program. But I doubt there's a whole lot of new juniors and seniors. Right, like the primary way for younger kids to get into the game is through the physical leagues and whatnot. It's much harder for them to get into it just through the online events. So not only will maybe juniors and seniors not be as good, but there might just not be juniors and seniors.
Yeah. Now that you're putting it like that, maybe this is actually what finally kills the divisions. Maybe, I don't know. Like, obviously I don't think they would just say no more little divisions anymore. But like if attendance is really bad for the first year back or something, like, I don't know what they're doing. There's always rumors floating around that they're going to like get rid of VGC or something. I know I've heard that rumor like at least three separate times over a couple of years that, you know, they were for sure killing VGC this year.
Although so VGC kind of got new life when they switched it over to the Switch. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah,
it got a really big platform. Kind of, I think, fixed a lot of the problems they had.
Right. Not that there was probably any amount of truth to people saying that sort of thing, but I mean, if you look at every other card game as a precedent, like, they've never really had divisions as far as I know. Like, Magic, I don't think ever has. Yu-Gi-Oh! Has briefly, but it doesn't anymore, to my knowledge. And I think maybe that would be, I think what, this is maybe just wrong, so maybe someone like Russell or something could correct me. But if I remember right, the younger division in Yu-Gi-Oh! Was just kind of like, if you showed up and you happened to be that age, they would just throw you into a side tournament while the big regionals was going on. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe that would just work for Pokemon for the time being. You know, I guess that's just what happens at League Cups or something already. Sometimes, you know, there's not enough juniors and seniors, just mash them together. Maybe that would be okay. I mean, again, you would get 14-year-olds playing 7-year-olds or something, which wouldn't be great, but...
Yeah, no, sure. I'm a big believer in age divisions, because I just don't think we would have gotten there if we'd been thrown in with Masters from day one.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Pokemon, like, they like the kids.
I think so, too. Like, but yeah,
I like the idea of age divisions as well, because it not only eases the kids in, but it gives them, like you said, if they're good when they're younger, it, like, gives them this confidence that then they can continue and use that momentum to keep going once they do hit 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah, but it's definitely weird for me. I mean, I know that they had kind of previously announced, oh, they're going to extend senior eligibility for a year and junior eligibility for a year. Like, I don't know if they do that now. I'm assuming that they go back and they say, we're just going to unwind all that, because, like, you're just destroying the age divisions if you say, well, we're going to extend it all 2 years. But like, what that means is, obviously, like, my son and then these other kids that you would think of as, like, top-tier competitors, like Reagan Retzloff or something, like, they basically never got to be seniors, right? Like, mm-hmm. they were a first-year senior, and then they missed the next 2 years of senior, and they went right into Masters. It's weird, because I'm sure that all those guys thought, we're going to have this kind of, like, John Eng, Grant Manley, Xander Pero, whatever kind of opportunity to, like, compete at the highest level as a senior and then step into Masters and demonstrate our, like, mojo. And instead, because Pokemon hasn't been able to have tournaments for young kids, like, they essentially haven't been allowed to play competitively for 2 years, and then they're just going to get, like, thrown in with Masters, who have been playing in Players Cup and, like, doing all this stuff, right? It's a weird thing. But I suspect there's kind of nothing to be done about it. Cause, like, I don't think you want to start a third age division or a fourth age division just to protect those poor people who had incredible bad luck. But
yeah, it's hard. I think that the John and Grant and Xander, people like that, are exceptions at the very least, in terms of, like, not every senior is expected to be better than Masters sort of the minute they age up. So it's not like there aren't a ton of these kids out there at the very least. I guess they probably came out a little worse than I meant it to, but I was trying to compliment their graduating class on being sort of particularly noteworthy, like perhaps the best one sort of in terms of just like people who have aged up, a group of kids who aged up relatively collectively and just kind of continued to dominate the game.
Yeah, I think there's two or three every year in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, I'm super close friends with them, but I look at, like, Caden Hyatt, somebody who would have been, like, a first-year master this year. He's very good. He'd probably be good.
I guess it's just sort of as a tangent here. One of the nice benefits of the game being stuck online is I'm developing a better knowledge, a better appreciation of younger kids in international. Like, I just know some kids from Brazil now, and they're really good, and they're always in the, you know, seniors from Brazil, they're always doing well in the online tournaments, and I've, like, talked to them occasionally and stuff too, and just kind of a cool little experience in our COVID times.
And kids interested in the game, do we want to talk about how apparently Pokemon's, like, completely run out of product?
Yeah, a good segue. Too much interest in the game.
I mean, hard for kids to develop an interest in Pokemon if you go to the Target and there's no Pokemon product.
Yeah.
Do you remember, do you know, I assume you would, AJ DeLoyal, Mikey?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, he works for like Target corporate in mm-hmm. like Tacoma now. And he's in the R group chat, and he's always popping in with just like people were fighting over. He's in charge of asset protection too, so right. He's like tackling shoplifters and stuff sometimes, or mm-hmm. he did back when he was in a store or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but anyways, but he was telling us not too long ago that Target, like corporate, are trying to like catch resellers and stuff. Like they're monitoring it, and like monitoring it in a way that's more nuanced than just like I'm paying attention to you physically in the store. I'm not letting you buy. It's like digital sort of tracking is involved trying to catch this. And I think, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I would imagine if Target's doing it, like everywhere is probably doing it, like Walmart's and places like that, I would think. But it's, you know, it's a problem that's manifesting not just for Pokemon. It's manifesting for these retail companies and stuff too. That's kind of how ridiculous it's become. But yeah, like I've said a time or two now, I've never seen Vivid Voltage physically yet. I've seen Champions Pass physically once, and you know, it's just my experience. I'll just never see rant stray packs again, but it might be good for my wallet. I'm that type of person. I always just like, I like opening packs, I guess, not to sidetrack us again, but I just like, I'll buy the tins rather than buy the tin promo, because it's like, oh, well, you know, I'll get the packs too. And like the card is worth $5. So it's like, oh, you know, those sorts of calculations. So I just, right. You know, I blew too much money buying like Espeon GX promos, because I just bought I bought the boxes instead of the promos, and, you know, for no reason other than just why not.
I like cracking packs. That's all there is to it. So Pokemon has said they're going to print more stuff. Does that, like, it made me realize, like, one of the weird things about this, like, collecting business is, like, people are collecting contemporary things where they can just print more to change the supply-demand dynamics. I mean, I don't know if, kind of what we were talking about earlier, if there's, like, this element of GameStopification to the, like, Pokemon mania. But, you know, I mean, I guess I'm hoping, I'm torn between, like, it'd be great if Pokemon cards were really valuable because I have a lot, but I also recognize, I mean, with any luck in a year, I'm going to need like a lot of Crobat Vs or like,
yeah.
I mean, all of us are in a, like a better place where if we said, you know, you have to pay $100, if you want 4 Crobat Vs, we'd be like, okay, like we can probably get enough value to justify sinking $400 into a place that a Crobat Vs. But I don't want the prices to get like magic crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. Will kind of the just like general, the average person's kind of interest in Pokemon and the cards, will this kind of surging popularity, will that ever affect a competitive cards? I mean, I guess obviously if it's a set like Champions Path and it's, you know, say a Crobat was only in Champions Path or something, like naturally the Crobat would be more expensive there elsewhere. But like, yeah, it's just actually something I don't know. I don't really know. I had a similar question. I'm just pretty ignorant when it comes to kind of the ebb and flow of the economy. But yeah, I mean, I guess obviously I would think it has to a little bit, but like, at what point is the game so popular that like Crobat's $200 or something
I assume a rising tide lifts all ships. Like I was saying, if you go on Verbank Pokemart, if they're selling Vivid Voltage boosters for $200, I mean, on the one hand, I'm like really, really excited to go to a tournament and try to win 3 booster boxes. Like that's what my kids do. But
yeah.
Man, I can't be buying Vivid Voltage cards that kind of prices.
What about too, in terms of like, does like Pokemon, okay, they're just like, we're reprinting more. That can't really cost them like any money. Like, so how much like realistically do you think they're going to do? Like, do you think it'll be, are we going to have surpluses of product out of nowhere? Is it just going to be like enough? Or I mean, maybe do the scalpers just double down? Like,
yeah, that's what I wonder too, is like, does it go from 200 to 60 or does it go from 200 to like 125 and it's like accessible, but it's not like flooded?
Because I mean, part of the value is not necessarily how much there is. It's me telling you that's how much I'm going to pay for it. So as long as people are sort of satisfying the scalpers, there's no reason to stop scalping. And you know, unless you suddenly have a moral obligation to it or something. Like, but I mean, obviously, I couldn't. I don't think it could get worse, but I could see it remaining hard, even still. Difficult to find cards, even if they're being printed more. It seems to, I guess it depends on where these cards fall. Like, is it Walmarts that are going to be having more? Is it everyone? Is it just the Pokemon Center? Because, too, sometimes the scalpers are the distributors. Like, I've seen posts here and there on Twitter on, you know, clearly, you know, just a local game store or something, just like clearly trying to flip their guaranteed Elite Trainer boxes and stuff like that. So sometimes, you know, you don't even have a say in it. It's just whoever you can buy from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just to, I was just looking on Trollin' Toad at some competitive Vivid Voltage singles, which is not a lot of them. And this might not be
Voltage story right here.
Yeah, this might not be totally accurate because maybe people just aren't buying the cards, so the singles are lower than they would have been. But like Colossal VMAX is $5 and Colossal V is $3, which is about what I would expect from a, you know, cards right. of those competitive stature. So far it doesn't seem to be affecting, but who knows when people actually want to start buying the singles for real.
Right. If they said, hey, we're starting up tournaments next week, we'd all rush out to buy Colossal VMAX and they'd be sold out tomorrow, right?
Yeah, right. So I don't know. But even like Crobats were fairly what you would expect, like $15 for the regular art, which, you know, it's a great card and goes in every deck. So I remember paying, I don't know, like 25 or so for Dedenes and Shamans. That always felt reasonable for, you know, a card of that stature. So we'll see. It is worrisome. I do think like the worry of all of this is not unfounded. I just hope that, you know, I'm optimistic that it won't affect us too much.
Yeah, well, it's weird because there's like this kind of supply demand driven economy, but like nobody knows what will happen, you know? Yeah. Like we're going to test a new economic environment and like see how supply and demand resolves itself in an incredibly short period of time. It'd be pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about Players Cup 3 for a minute?
Okay.
And then we can circle back around and talk about the unbans. How's Players Cup 3 going, man?
I got 2 keys left, so I'm almost done. I have 130 points, something like that. 129. Yeah, played mostly Pika again since we talked. I played a little bit more since last week. I was on the LMZ train. I played a couple more with LMZ. Tried Senescorch just for a couple. Those went okay. And then I switched back to Pika, and I won 5 in a row, which was good. And then I finally lost one. And then I played one with the Blounds list that Ross is destroying with, and I won that one. And so I only have 2 more left. But almost, I would say, like, I've played a little bit of everything in these cups, in these tournaments, but about, I don't know, maybe about 60% of my points I've gotten with Pika, about 30% with Luke Metal, and then the last 10% with the random one or two of tournaments that I played with the other decks.
So did you go off LMZ because you felt like you should try Szymanski Senescorch, or was there some other reason you went off LMZ?
I went off LMZ pretty soon after Szymanski posted his Senescorch list because I was worried about playing against more Senescorch.
Fear of Army of Senescorch?
Yeah, which was fairly accurate. Not like a ton of Senescorch, but certainly a large uptick comparatively to what I was playing before.
And I assume Senescorch didn't go well for you, and you played some mirrors, and you said, "I should just play Pika around."
Pika's
favorite against Senescorch all the time.
So definitely Pika is favorite, but it is funny you say that. So I played exactly 2 keys with Senescorch. The first one, I beat 2 mirrors, and then I beat a Zacian, and then in the second one, I lost in the first round to Senescorch. And my note on it was, I didn't play good. So, yeah, so I don't think I understood the Senescorch mirror as well as I would have liked. And then
the Senescorch mirror, in my experience, I play a lot of Senescorch, probably the deck I've played the most more recently. I guess I did learn Pika for the keys. Senescorch mirror is like, it's nuanced, but only in these games where both players are hitting their welders and stuff. There's a lot of scenarios where like player one wins the game, you know, kind of on their first turn. There's those scenarios, but like when both players are like both players have the deck like running well, it's a pretty fun matchup. It's methodical, but some games are just like I hit welder and you didn't, or some games are just like. It depends on if they play Heatran a lot, because I know that's kind of what characterizes the Shemansky list, Alex's list versus the general Twitter list or something, is he still plays Heatran, whereas most of the Twitter list is kind of on Reshazard. And that card can be really big in Mirror. It can one-shot Senescorch out of like reasonably out of nowhere, or at least in ways that the VMAX can't. You know, you need eight energies,
because I could imagine like
a full.
It seems like the two ways to play the matchup is either go big on one Senescorch and just like, all right, I'm gonna one shot your guy before you get to hit mine, and then you get to like take four or five prizes, maybe even all six with the big guy, and then just try and find your last couple prizes with something else later on. Or you set up two Senescorches with kind of like three energy each, and you go for like this two-shot game. And so I imagine if you're playing that second strategy, the Heatran can really come in to take that big one shot if you need to, because you can pull the energy from both guys that you've been powering up.
I think that's right, but I think part of it too, again, is just kind of like, what are you given? What cards did you draw? Because like, I think which route you choose is largely dependent on that. It's largely dependent on like the Volcanion or not. Did I get four energies? Did I get six energies on the board on my first turn or something like that? And that's sort of what I mean. And I talked about this last week, but the games that Senescorch welders two energy and has Volcanion on the first turn just basically never loses.
Yeah.
And just that's true in the mirror match, or if you're playing ADP or Pikachu or something. Yeah. Pikachu being the exception, because you have a realistic out that isn't too hard to do, like could just be one pair of paralysis could do the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other decks just like have to two shot it or something, which is often when they pop off like that, you just don't have enough time.
Yeah.
And then they have the next one. Like you'll kill this big one, and then they'll do 160 to a Dedenne with the second one or something like that.
Yeah, makes sense.
Do you have a feeling? Is there like any consistent like meta right now? Is it still like more Senescorch, or is it like?
Personally, the two decks that I play against the most are ADP and Eternatus.
It felt like there was a meta when I was playing, but since it's been a few weeks, I don't know what it changed. But yeah, I didn't play against too much Eternatus, really just a handful of times. I play against so much ADP and then just a little bit of. Just kind of a little bit, almost equal amounts of everything else.
Yeah. ADP is definitely by far the most popular.
I think if you like qualified the ADP decks like differently, I think like the deck I played against the most would be ADP Hammers. And then the second most deck would be like ADP.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. But I don't know. So it is interesting to think about how things may or may not change in these last 2 weeks, because it seems like a lot of people have played a lot of their keys, but maybe not. Maybe it's just like what we've seen people post. Like there's a bias of just seeing people post about their results. I'm sure there is.
I think it's going to be like last year. I mean, Azul just tweeted today, okay, I'm going to start using my keys now.
Right.
So I think, we wondered if there were going to be people who kind of waited until the end because they thought everybody else was burning their keys. Azul clearly fell into the everybody else is burning their keys, I'm going to wait, and then I'll come in and get easy lobbies.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to work out like that.
I thought about that, or at least since it's looking like I probably won't qualify again this time, I thought about like, maybe that's what I should have done. And I don't think so. Like, I don't regret that approach. Like, if I want to be a good player, why would I purposefully choose an easier environment? And I guess with someone like Azul, you could easily respond that it doesn't matter, and that's true. Like he would qualify regardless of when he plays. But for someone like me, who's like trying to grow, like, you know, certain players, like, you know, maybe I could have asked someone to play keys for me, and I'm sure people do that in the same way that people are talking about, you know, how you can't all be in a discard call together, you know, at a certain point it's cheating, right? But yeah, like if I want to improve, I don't think I should purposefully seek out the easier lot. Like, okay, because I want to improve, right? My goal is not, my ultimate goal is not to qualify for the Players Cup, right? And so if those were inverse, then I think there would be a stronger argument for like, yeah, just do what's ever easy. But I'm not sure what I'll end up doing for the next one. But I thought about that. Like, would that have maybe made a difference?
I don't know. I feel like we discussed it, and it wasn't obvious that that was actually a thing. Like, I felt like it turned out there were a bunch of guys right at the end that were, like, really grinding out keys and piling up, like, crazy stats. But, like, There were these good players. I mean, you're like, okay, I was going to wait until the end, and, like, now I'm in the lobbies with Azul every time I burn a key.
Right.
So, yeah. Mike, do you want to talk to us about Blounds?
So, I mean, the list that Ross has been playing is pretty similar to a lot of the other, like, Chris Ephelon lists. The only big difference is that he plays a couple spinners over some other cards. And I think the biggest thing, well, the two big things that spinners allow you to do is, one, if you go second on your first turn can be much more explosive. You can often get a big one shot with the Blown, or it just helps you find energies on the first turn to Welder, to Cramorant, or whatever you're doing. But the other thing is, throughout the game, I do find that often you're trying to Stellar Wish for a way to get energies, often. So whether that's Fire Crystal, whether it's Giant Hearth, and this just kind of gives you one more option to Stellar Wish for an energy. So it's been pretty good. Like I said, I only played the one key with it, but I am playing it in a Atlas event, so I'm going to get some more experience with it. I mean, Ross is 33 keys in and has 118 points. So I think if he keeps his pace, he'll pass Szymanski for number one. So I don't know if that'll happen. I feel like this happened last time as well. Like, Ross had the first like 30, 40 keys, he had like an insane record. In the last 10, he just got eighth like every single time. So hopefully that doesn't happen. I mean, it doesn't matter. He's already qualified, but like, it'd be cool for him to do so well.
To really run up the score a little.
Yeah. So we'll see. Blounds is pretty good though. The only other thing I wanted to mention from my decks is I have been playing the Pika version that kind of has gotten popular over the last 2 weeks or so, with the two Yell Grunts. Basically, they cut the energy switch spots for the two Yell Grunts, and they cut the big charm for a tag switch, and they cut one of the Chaotic Swells for a third Bolton. So I've been playing that, but the one card that I'm still not convinced about is Tag Switch. I've been playing without the tag switch and just running two Swell still from that kind of standard list, just because in the Players Cup in particular, the Eternatus variants are very often Power Plant Eternatus. I don't know why. I just played against so much Power Plant Eternatus. So the second Swell was really good there. So I don't know what's better overall, but I do think the two Yell Grunts are pretty strong in this meta. They're really good against Eternatus, obviously. That's the main reason that you play them. But they're pretty good against ADP for obvious reasons. Not as good, but still pretty good. But they're actually also really good against Luke Metal, because that matchup is all just about kind of going slow, each of you kind of taking your time, doing little things, conserving your resources. And Yell Grunt just gives you a way to slow them down a little bit, and maybe you get an extra free attack of damage in there. So it's actually really good in that matchup. Can be okay in the mirror as well. Anything else, not super useful, but they're surprisingly versatile for matchups other than really the intended purpose, which is Eternatus.
Nice. So the one other Players Cup 3 question that I want to talk, did either of you get the chance to read Caleb Gedimer's article on Channel Fireball?
I skimmed it earlier today. Yeah, I didn't read everything, but I got the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, he piled up like 117-ish points playing primarily ADP. I have no idea what the question I was going to ask you guys about it was. It was an interesting thing that I thought was noteworthy about what the heck he did there.
So while you're thinking about that, I do remember when I was skimming it, he talked about his matchups and his conclusions of the matchups, which, regardless if I agree or disagree with them, which mostly some of them I agreed, some of them I disagreed. For example, he thought P Pico was very favored and he thought Senna Scorch was favored, which is fine. But I do think like these are not these are not the events to make those conclusions from, I don't think. You know, they're closed deck lists. You're playing against random people that may have good deck lists. Well, may have good deck lists, may not. But even if they do have good deck lists, then, you know, they might not be playing them optimally. So I don't think you can really draw too many conclusions overall. You can draw conclusions about your own play and individual things that you could have done or done better or differently. But I don't think we really should be making broad assumptions on matchups based on these events.
Oh, so here's the question I wanted to ask you guys. The one thing that I thought was really innovative and interesting about his list is he plays three big charms and then he plays one Zigzagoon.
Okay.
So I felt like last week we spent a lot of time kind of grinding on the value of the big charms versus vitality bands. And I wondered if you guys had a reaction. Like, I thought it was like, oh, that's an interesting kind of resolution to the problem conceptually. Cause like you can squeak out that extra 10 damage in the two or three matchups where you need it. And then you got big charms. Big charms are great. And I assume he's thinking his three big charms is what like really moves the needle for him in a meaningful way in like the Pikaram matchup, right?
I don't think there's really much math that it helps in the Pikaram matchup, but I could see that the Senna Scorch matchup gets a lot better.
Really good in Mir. I think I would really play super high charm if I had to beat ADP Mirrors all day. Like if you can be just careful about the draw Pokemon new bench and you can put a charm on the first one, let's say, mm-hmm. like you just usually can't win. Like if the scenario is that ADP is gonna take the first prize and that's what's gonna tempo you out of the game, if you stop that play, like it just buys an extra turn. It's almost like they miss alter sometimes. Like yeah. it's you know, the game is almost always going to be five turns max or something like that. And so having 20% more time, of course, means a whole lot. But yeah, like, I'm not sure. Big Charm is a card I find myself like wanting to play high counts of, but I'm never impressed with like the third one. I always find myself comfortable at two, because I know like Kevin Clemente, I think the Pikaram list that he made, I think top 16 in the last Players Cup with, he was rocking Triple Charm and No Hammer. And when I was testing No Hammers for the Players Cup, I started there just because I like tools. I like having more health. And just like I just said, it feels like overkill. But again, I think if you're really, really hedging against certain matchups, and the same Charms being good on your Dedenes and Crobats is true, of course. And Pikaram, it doesn't just have to be as an ADP player or something, but I feel like they have more mileage in ADP maybe than in Pikaram, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, and
like a hair more.
Yeah. And we did talk about last week that if you're going to play these tools, you should commit. So running three big charm, I think, is certainly better than running one. The difference between two and three, I don't know, but you certainly find it much earlier. I think that's probably the biggest against like Senna Scorch and Eternatus, because you really, really need it on the first ADP or yeah. the ADP.
And to Britt's point, like, I like the idea. I mean, interestingly, he only went 13-8 versus the mirror. And I assume he's like the more skillful player in virtually every one of those games. But yeah, I mean, finding a big charm early to slap on the Day-Day or something like that to like keep him from getting that ultimate Ray one shot and putting pressure on him to find a scrapper quickly, like, seems good.
Yeah.
Seems like it'd be good against LMZ. Like, big charms. There's a reason why we liked it last week.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that Zig, the idea of Zigzagoons and one Zigzagoon and then a bunch of big charms seemed like an interesting resolution of the problem, because there's like a couple of matchups where the extra 10 really moves the needle. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I got a plan for that.
Yeah, I always like the compromise approach. I feel like as a deck builder, that typically tends to be what I like the most, is never committing. I don't know if I've ever entered a tournament with a deck that just couldn't beat something. Like, I've never just like, I just can't do that. And to the point where it's a fault, I think, at times too, but I'm always going to have the Decidueye answer. I just hate having an auto loss, even if it's like not a super popular one. There's just something sort of like psychological about it that I'm teching out my deck. I'm just never going to be the, kind of consistent one.
I mean, if you're, you know, it's interesting. I remember this kind of relates to a conversation I think I had with Azul about the DDG, like, team strategy. Like, when you're a good player, like, I think you're willing to reduce your, like, you know, you're willing to take a lot more 50-50s to have a 50-50 against, like, other stuff, right? Because you're like, well, I'm a good player, so it'll be fine. What I don't want is to, like, flip over cards against a player who's just objectively so much worse than me and be like, ah, I'm going to lose.
Right. I mean, I think, too, to exactly that point, like, that's what happens. That's exactly what happens to me is that I play, like, someone round one, round two with a binder drop or something a little better than that, and it's just so unintentionally good against me. And I know I think I've told stories like this before, and it's just like, this isn't a meta deck. This was not a deck made or chosen to beat my meta deck, but boy golly does it.
So I remember I had a conversation with Azul about, you know, kind of halfway through the DDG life cycle about how his kind of process of building decks and working with the DDG team. And what he said he felt like the decks that he played before DDG, it was like, he was just trying to make everything 50-50, everything 50-50, everything 50-50. And in like building decks with Pendarvis and Igor, he was a little more open to like, we're going to like really refine what we think the meta is and polarize games a little bit more to like make sure we do not lose to like the decks that people are going to be playing at this tournament. And we're going to be more open to taking losses at the very, very edge. And yeah. And he was like, you know, historically, that has not been my approach.
I mean, it's such a good example, too, just to kind of knock myself a little further, is that so many of the times that like Azul or Ryan Sablehouse that they do well, it's with these decks that are just like Volcanion or I'm trying to think of another good example where I just like, it's that like I could never play Volcanion because I didn't want to lose to Greninja. It's things like that. And obviously, like, you can just beat Greninja when you're good enough sometimes. But yeah, I just never play these decks because I worry about, you know, things that I shouldn't be worried about. And I just clearly need to have, you know, a more maybe statistical or mathematical mind when I'm thinking about these things rather than just like, will they, won't they, do they play this? What if they don't? Blah, blah, blah. Like, no, just play a good deck and be good.
I assume you guys read Xander's article on Channel Fireball?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read it, actually. I did see it, but it's like the old data one, right?
Yeah. Have you messed around with Datadog?
I clicked on the site, but I've been busy and haven't gotten a chance to. I feel like I've gone through like spurts of motivation for the data analysis, computer science stuff. And right now I'm on a not so interested.
It's, you know, I love anytime somebody goes to trouble of really like doing this interesting kind of analysis. And in that respect, I like it. You know, it seems like it would be pretty like, you know, I guess what's funny is, you know, they have all these win rates and they'll tell you like decks that had this card and how many copies of this card, what their win rate was against this, like against these meta decks, which conceptually is really, really good.
We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like the sample sizes seem big enough that like most of the results are statistically significant, but it does seem like it would be really easy for them to add, you know, here's what statistical significance would be at like these number of games played or something like that to help you kind of suss out what the answers are. I think the other thing that's weird is when he says like people that run one copy of this win 5% more against blah, blah, blah. Like, I wish you had a little more insight into what the trade-offs were.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, like that's like Xander puts together these kind of data optimized lists at the end. And it's like a little bit of an exercise in kind of going through and saying, like, here's what I think the shell is. And then here are the cards that had the highest win rates against like some perceived meta. And I suspect there's some way to be slightly nerdier about that, but I don't know what it is right off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, so I'm skimming it right now. One thing that I am a little, there's a couple things I'm cautious of with looking at something like this. So one of the things that comes to mind is he talks about one great catcher in Pikaram significantly improves its overall win rate. Looking at overall from the past month, the win rate increases from 51.4% to 55.2%, with sample sizes 3,391 for without great catcher and 268 with the great catcher. So two things going on here. One, such a lower sample size with the great catcher. So I am a little hesitant to make a conclusion that like great catcher is strictly better from when the sample sizes are so drastically different, because that means that probably the people that were playing great catcher, or at least there's a world where most of the people playing great catcher are much better than the people that are not playing great catcher.
Or Mike Fouché.
Right. Well, yeah. Now, if the sample sizes are really similar to each other, that probably balances out. But if the sample sizes are very different, that's probably telling you something, that there's some subset of the population that is either much better or much worse than the average. And that's why they're playing such a card. Maybe they're playing it because they know it's really improving the deck's win rate, or maybe they're just winning because they're better, or maybe they're losing more because they're worse. So I don't know. That's like the only, I know with like large enough numbers, this stuff should not matter too much, but our numbers aren't that big. We're not talking about like hundreds of thousands of games here.
Yeah. Well, that's, so I don't know if you guys saw, like, as I was pulling together show notes for this, I sent a tweet out into the universe at the Limitless guys, where I was saying when people submit match results, they should submit whether or not they went first or second.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I mean, that would be such an easy function to just implement into the whole just like reporting tab that you always have to do. It would, yeah, just be a really seamless way to collect more data.
Like everybody, so yeah, in my mind, and you know, I kind of harassed Xander about this a little bit. It seems to me like if I was going to do a logistic regression of what makes a deck win, it's like the cards in the deck, who went first, and player skill seem like the three like big drivers. And then you have to have just like sample size to drive out the RNG, you know? Like everything else is kind of RNG a little bit. And I was trying to think about how you would kind of do player skill. And here's my like new idea that I was all set to spring on Xander at the pod. You know, historically, I was like, well, I'll use CP, because like CP was the thing that was always changing and people had CP. And kind of to Britt's point at the start of the pod, that's not a thing anymore. But my new idea, and I think that this is probably easy to implement in the context of Datadog in some way, is like you could mess around with a logistic regression where you looked at that player's last, like the same player who played that deck, like their last 50 games. Or 100 games or 10 games. And you could even like run a logistic regression on all three to figure out which one is actually like how many games you have to include before you at all, like kind of the curve melts away to lacking value. But I feel like there's some way you could measure player skill by looking at their last X tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And just like roll up those tournaments and then say, you know, I mean, if a guy who's gone, you know, 40 and 10 in his last 50 rounds is playing a guy who's gone 20 and 30 in his last 50 rounds, that means something. I don't know what.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And presumably, I don't know how Robin has set up the website, because we don't have access to our own individual data on the site, but my guess is that somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked before, I think, about how like, you know, you should be able to go to like the Magnitude page and see all of Magnitude's results. Like now you can go into a tournament and find Magnitude in every tournament, but there's no like rolled up page, which is weird.
Coming soon, I'm sure. It seems pretty easy.
I think when I tweeted at them about that, I think their response was like, you know, they're working on more like core things right now than that. And I was like, I don't know what's more core than that, but clearly, they're supposed to have a Trello where they show us their product roadmap.
Yeah.
This is how people do these things. But it just made me realize how close we are to, in this like new world, having so much more interesting opportunity to do analytics. And I wonder if tournaments resume tomorrow, it would be a little sad, because like the Limitless platform has added the ability to kind of look at this stuff in a new and interesting way that was really hard to before. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if that means that I'm like advocating that Pokemon acquire Limitless or something like that, but it's something like that. Like, I would hate for all this to go away the second league challenges resume.
I know.
Like, that'd suck, right?
Yeah. I remember seeing someone post on Twitter that Pokemon should just use Limitless for real events.
Just now, hire them. You guys do it. You're better than us.
Maybe like Limitless and Arcanine could do some collab thing, because I'm sure, like, you know, they run so many tournaments already, but I guess I'd be worried just like on the server side of like, can it host all that traffic? But that's somewhat easily fixed if they were getting paid.
Yeah. Like, I mean, big scheme of things, you can just slap all that on Amazon Web Services and like press a button and it starts auto scaling like crazy, probably.
Right.
This is not like super, this is not processor intensive kind of stuff. Like, they're not doing computation really.
Right.
So funny in that way.
Yeah, I wonder. I would think if I had to sort of wager a prediction, I would think that once like physical events are back, official ones, sanctioned ones, of course the online community I think will mostly die, but I would think there might still be space for like the Limitless weekly. Like, I think maybe not Hexsters even, but I think one tournament probably hangs on, like one sort of weekly experience. It just, especially when there's cash involved, but it'll be interesting to see if people try to hang on, if it's just immediately dropped, if it's kind of a sad process, you know, watching it slowly die. I don't have a clue. I think it really could go in a couple different directions, but hopefully we can further our data somehow, even if we're just in person.
I mean, maybe the moral story, I know, right before I think we started recording the pod, Britt, you and I were talking about like how they need ranked ladder and stuff like that. Like, what if Pokemon rolled out, you know, where we're just doing a like Players Cup-ish thing every like Sunday, anybody can log on and compete, and it's like double elimination.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be good. I think that would be a great.
I assume if Pokemon was doing it and they like had some serious prizing, jillions of people would compete.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do Hexsters when you could do like the Pokemon official tournament? And obviously, like, that's the, like, we create, you know, some sort of CP-ish kind of path to other tournaments and circuits and blah blah blah, right? Maybe I wonder if they're working on that instead of ranked ladder. Like, yeah, I'm sure they're working on stuff.
Yeah,
give us something good.
I don't know. Surely they're working on something, but.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm not holding my breath. People, you know, there's no reason to speculate certain things. Like,
oh my God, we have a podcast. Of course, there's great reasons to speculate.
Well, I mean, of course, but like, I just mean in terms of like getting your hopes up. Like, whenever we wanted something and ever gotten it, like, and in this sort of field, the topics related to something like this, it's always been like, I don't know. I feel like there was a rumor just forever ago that like it was maybe coming to the Switch, not PTCGO, but, and actually, no, I think that's what I mean. Like, maybe it was coming to the Switch or some sort of Pokemon online client. I think that would do really, really well right now. Maybe more than improving PTCGO is that for them to make like the Game Boy Color game again on the Switch. I think that would sell like hotcakes, actually. Like, right now, like, it was the kind of the general populace being into Pokemon kind of on a similar level to where they were at with like Pokemon Go. I think people, and especially too, that it's not just Pokemon that's popular, it's specifically the cards. Like, I feel like that would really, really, that would get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players in. And again, in a game like that, you don't really have to worry about balance and things like that. I think it's fun. I think even maybe even Russell would enjoy a game like an actual game where you're forced to play ADP or something. Like, I think that just kind of RPG single player experience that the Game Boy Color game has is, if you like video games, I think would do really well, and then of course would be a conduit to bringing people into the game. But I would play that regardless of format.
Yeah, that would be so sweet. I don't know if I ever told you guys, but that is how I learned how to play, was the Game Boy Color game. So
I think I did too, because I had it, and I remember I went to League and stuff, but I don't think we knew how to play. But I did have that, and I was able to beat it when I was a kid.
Love it.
I don't know, sort of a last thought too, just in talking about improving PTCGO. I don't know if you saw, Mikey, the changes that are coming to Hearthstone, but I thought like some of those, I'm really excited about those. I think those are all kind of cool. It'll be new at the very least.
But I was thinking about, is that what you're talking about?
Like
the core, rotation.
Yeah, like they're kind of, it's a new rotation essentially. They're just kind of fixing what's been the standard since they started rotating.
Mm-hmm.
And more so just what I think what intrigues me is that just there's the classic format where, you know, Hearthstone is different because instead of like they change the cards themselves rather than just trying to balancing them out with new ones. And so in this classic format, you get to play with cards that have, you know, as if they've were always as they came out, no nerfs, no updates. And but all that to say that like it's just a format, you know, you can just have an entire, you know, format. I think again, like people want more formats to PTCGO too. It's not like it's so bizarre. I mean, I guess there aren't really too many formats to Pokemon as it is, but like Legacy just doesn't exist, but it has somewhat of a presence on PTCGO. And I think people would love, you know, more of that, more just like nostalgia sort of content. I always love how Hearthstone, the around the world championships, the Tavern Brawl is the world's decks. I wish Pokemon was like Pokemon being able to do something like that in an online format, I think also would be really beneficial. Just like different ways to learn the game.
That's I think there's a lot of nostalgia for like old format decks right now too. Like, yeah, nostalgia, people love it.
Yeah.
That was my other big ask for Limitless, was to create some sort of like way to have a short URL to print proxies for like entire decks. So I could just be like, I want to print the Haymaker deck for my children. click here. And you know, people could just post in the Snowpoint Temple, like, here's a deck you could play in like year blah 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 blah. And I'll just be like, print it. Since I don't have any of the cards. Anything else, guys?
Oh, just wanted to briefly talk about the unbanned and expanded.
Oh, yeah.
Just real quick. Not too much to talk about. Like, Wally has almost nothing to talk about. It's fine. And then Lusamine is really interesting. The coolest decks that I've seen so far are like the Magnezone Dual Brains decks that can now work with Lusamine. So I'm going to be trying those. I don't know if you saw Sander posted one that is, so you use Sableye, the one that is, well, I think the attack is limitation, so your opponent can't play supporters next turn, so you shut off Guzma, and you have Black Market, and you play Ninetales, so Ninetales says nobody can play stadium cards, so you got to play your stadium card first, then play Ninetales, and now nobody can ever get rid of Black Market, because Field Blowers and Zerosix don't work on it, and they can't play their own stadium because of Ninetales. And so supporter, you stop Guzma, so they can't kill your Ninetales. And then you have Magnezone to play two supporters. So you can loop. So one infinite loop is with Brock's Grit. So as things get knocked out, you know, you just Brock's Grit them back and then get Sableye again. But the other one is really cool. He runs Darkrai GX and Nanu. So a Sableye dies, you Darkrai GX, get the energy back, Nanu into the Sableye. And then Darkrai goes back to the discard, and then that's like an infinite loop that way. So pretty cool list. I'm going to definitely mess around with that.
Yeah, Sandra's an innovator.
Yeah.
it is always a joy to see, and I've always been a Dual Brains fan. So the more viable Dual Brains is, the happier I'll be.
Yeah,
I saw that list, and I saw the Ninetales, and I was immediately intrigued. But yeah, it's so complicated.
Yeah,
all these decks just have all of his decks just have so much going on. It was this exact experience. I was just like, I don't really want to figure it out. Actually, I'll just wait for someone to explain the deck to me.
I really appreciate that, Mike. I this is the value of the pod, because I saw the list and I immediately sent it to Liam and I was like, this is a good deck, but I couldn't figure out the core loop completely. Yeah, having you explain how the Darkrai GX worked with the Nanu change.
Yeah, that's what I'm always doing with these control decks. It's like, okay, I see part of it, but I don't see with his list specifically too. Yeah. Like the Excadrill control, Chinchino is pretty straightforward in terms of just like,
the hand
just use Chinchino to draw cards and, you know, shuffle them back, easy enough. But yeah,
and watching him get streamed in Players Cup, I think was like life changing for people. Like watching him do like the scoop up nets and all that. Yeah, like everybody was like, okay, that's, this deck cannot be beat. I hadn't realized how unbeatable this deck was until I saw this thing.
I have, on that note, I have also been playing in one of the Atlas events this past week with the standard control deck, you know, the Muck Munchlax thing. And I won my first four, and then I just lost to an Eternatus today. So doing pretty good. I'm learning how to play it. It's pretty fun. I think it's pretty good. It's something that I really am going to consider for the double elimination bracket for Players Cup, because we essentially are untimed matches there. I think you have the player timers on, but that's like 50 minute game. So it's really no timer. So you get to really kind of think about.
Right. Once you get cycling, you can play really, really fast, right?
Yeah. So it's pretty good. It's a pretty good deck. I'm excited to keep playing it.
We should talk more about that in a future week.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Once I have this tournament under my belt, I'll have more experience.
When you've won this tournament, will everybody wants what you're talking about. So we'll get there.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe I'll have to wait next time. I just feel like I'm not particularly motivated to play standard, but I still like want to play Pokemon. I want to improve. Maybe this will be like, I should spend this little hiatus until the next set trying to accrue old formats. Like this idea just popped into my head, and I think I'm going to try to do that. I've just really, really wanting to play in various old world formats and just don't have cards because I didn't, you know, my PTCGO account hasn't been updated till now. Maybe that's what I'll do now that I have a little bit of time, since I won't be playing in the sort of next phase of things. I'm going to get the couple of years of worlds I want to play, see if I can figure out how to trade for these guys. I just assume they'll be too expensive, but I've never actually looked.
Yeah. That's that. Do you already have beaches in your account?
No beaches. That's always kind of an embarrassing thing. I've just always... I've always sold myself off, but now recently I've been like kind of trying to buy back some old world stuff. Like I've really been trying to find one of the top 32 worlds bags that I won and that I sold, and it's just kind of embarrassing. It's just like I don't want it back.
It's like you know, selling low and buying high. Never works out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out is like this Pokemon stuff, are we at some weird like GameStop moment where I'm supposed to be just like selling the, like, yeah, we have all these bags, we have all this like swag from like EUICs, like stuff like that.
I would, but I I'm think
gonna,
so.
I'm always scared to sell because I feel like I'll find out I sold low.
I sold almost all of my like plexiglass trophies like forever ago, and I don't regret that for a second. Mm-hmm. I think now would definitely be the time to try to move that stuff. Like naturally, I'm sure you don't want to, you're not trying to get rid of your big important ones, but like if you can move the city's ones. Were you guys playing back then when you would win the city championship? I know you were obviously.
I'm sure. Do you still have yours, Mike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got like a big container in my mom's garage.
Yeah, that's we caught just like the tail end of that. So we have like 15 or 20 plexiglass things. So no big container, but Liam actually has them on a shelf in his room. He likes it.
Nice.
I mean, I kept a few of them, but I sold off like the extras. I kept like one from each year. So I have like city championship, like 2014, 2015, and then the more important ones. But I just got rid of like a ton of states top fours, cities, all these, just like, and they're all the same too, like,
yeah, they all
they're the same. Yeah,
that is the sad
they
part.
Don't look any different, but yeah,
there was definitely. So like when I first started playing, like the first maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe even up to 4 years, like 2004 to like 2007-8, somewhere around there, they had a couple different versions and they were glass trophies, so those were nice.
Yeah, right when I first started playing, they were really nice. And it was kind of the very next year. No, okay, so the next year it was medals only. I forgot about that.
Hmm.
Sold those too. Yeah, there was a year where we only got like medals. That was 2011.
Hmm.
But yeah, before that the glass was like huge. Like I have a top four states one, and it's beautiful, massive. Yeah, they used to be really nice.
Like a nice curved glass.
Switched to the plastic.
Yeah, now it's all mats. Mats. Man. All right, guys. Strong stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Pick it up next week.
All right.
Take care. Yeah. Stay warm, stay safe. Thank you, Brent. Mm-hmm. Talk to you.